Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Kosher Scene. Our guest this evening is Menachem Lubinsky, founder and CEO of Lubicam, and the one who funded Kosher Fest 23 years ago. We'll be talking tonight about the upcoming Kosher Fest 2011. Good evening, Mr. Lubinsky.
Good evening.
Want to tell us a little bit about the history of Kosher Fest, how it evolved since its early days until today, how many more companies we have, how the show grew, how it changed, and so on?
Well, the show actually began in 1987 as a combined consumer and trade show in the Jacob Javits Center in New York. It then, 2 years later, it became a trade show only. We recognized that most of the companies that at that time were serving the kosher community were interested in expanding their market. And you're talking about a time in 1987 when there was somewhat in the order of about 16,000 products that had kosher certification. Just to put that into some kind of frame of reference, today there are over 125,000 items with kosher certification on the shelves, in addition to another 250,000 ingredient items that are kosher. 1987, the late 80s, was the beginning of what I like to call the kosher revolution. It was a period in which the kosher began its journey upscale into an entirely new planet. And what happened in the first Kosher Fest, which was 23 years ago, there were 69 exhibitors, and roughly no more than 800 people that visited the show. To put that into perspective again, this coming year, which will be November 8th and 9th at the Meadowlands Exposition Center, the number of exhibitors will be well over 300, and the number of visitors will be well over 7,000. And it's become a global show. It's not just America. There are exhibitors there from at least a dozen countries, visitors from almost 30 countries, because in many respects, kosher has gone global. It's you practically can't even sell an ingredient item anywhere in the world to the United States if it doesn't have kosher certification. Who's going to buy it? Coca-Cola's not going to buy it. Danone's not going to buy it. Kellogg's is not going to buy it. And with most of the large companies, the icon companies today having kosher certification, that is why we have today Hashgacha in 90 countries. Whether you're in China or in Thailand or in New Zealand, if you have any intention of selling to the American market, and by extension, there is certainly an interest in the Israeli market, which is a $17 billion food market, again, you need kosher certification. There was a lot of history in between. The history in between was, and this was sort of the vision that I had, was that the kosher community had come of age, that it was time to graduate from the standard kosher products of the chopped liver and the stuffed cabbage kind of mentality, and stores that had just a box of matzahs, yahrzeit candles, and grape juice. The idea, what happened in the revolution that happened in kosher wines, that went from a few sweet sacramental kosher wines into a world of wines and spirits today that are taking the entire international community by storm. So, obviously, over these 23 years, a lot has changed. I think one of the major reasons for the positive development of kosher was that the nation's supermarkets bought into this. Once the supermarkets bought into kosher, it became accessible to everybody. It was no longer just for people who eat kosher because of kashrus. It was for people who appreciated kosher because of its health benefit, because of its because of its technologically advanced state, because of its packaging, because of its quality, because of what it had to offer.
Well, with all those many products competing, how does a company secure a halfway decent shelf space?
Well, the way toward to success at shelf space today is no different for a kosher product than a non-kosher product. You still need to produce a quality product. You still have to produce, in today's day and age, something that is a bit different, that is a bit in demand. To give you an example, today we're living in the midst of a craze of gluten-free products, and the as many products as are produced gluten-free, people are buying them. The whole idea of the whole foods and the natural and the organic. So any manufacturer that has the pulse on what the buyers, what the market is looking for, knows where to put the emphasis, and the fact that it is kosher makes it that much easier to get on shelf space, because it makes no sense for a supermarket to take a product or a gourmet item or a fancy food item that doesn't have kosher certification, because the optimal marketing objective is to try to be as broad as possible and to get as many consumers into the store as possible.
Okay. With over 300 exhibitors at this upcoming Kosher Fest on November 8th and 9th of this year, are there any new products that never existed before, or are some of them more of the same?
No.
When I say never existed before, I mean that were not available in the kosher markets.
No, on the contrary, I think kosher today is on the cutting edge of developing new products. I mean, we see just coming out of Israel a tremendous amount of new products that one could never believe could be made kosher for Pesach, for example, the Passover, and yet they're being produced. They're different types of products that had fat content, that were high in saturated fats. As a result of technology, are being produced today much leaner, and much more appealing to the health desires of consumers. There are three types of new products today. There's a new product that is what I call line extension. That means when somebody produces a certain item, and just goes into a new flavor, or a new size, or just something that adds to the product, you know, add a different flavor. That's one type of new product. There's a second type of new product that is totally revolutionary, that is totally new. This past Pesach, one of the best-selling items on the market was a gluten-free matzah, because it was almost taken for granted that people who don't have a tolerance for gluten had to suffer for 9 days. There was no option for them anywhere out. That's the second type of new product. The third type of new product is kind of like the creative and the different items that you never thought were product. The type of, you know, it was like years ago when somebody said the word sushi, they automatically meant non-kosher. And today, sushi is very much a part of every event and every store and every restaurant. So this
every major restaurant has it.
Every major restaurant today has sushi. Sushi has become a staple, just as much as any other kosher item. So, and the bottom line is, if there are approximately 9,000 or 10,000 new products that are hit the United States shelves, the majority of them, more than half, are kosher certified. In fact, the number one item, the number one claim on new products, is the fact that they are kosher. And this has been extraordinary. I have to admit that as someone who has watched this industry develop, watched this growth, I sometimes am myself amazed at just the interest. I mean, we graduated. First it was the supermarkets. Then we went from the supermarkets, we went to the major discount stores. Now the Costco's and the Targets and the Sam's Clubs and all of these discount clubs that never even looked at kosher have became big vendors of kosher. And now you have another generation. Now you have all the convenience stores, gas stations. It just keeps mushrooming from one level to the next as demand increases.
When I spoke to you last year, shortly after Kosher Fest 2010.
Right.
He told me that one of the important things in the marketing of kosher products in today's world was the change in packaging. We no longer have the cellophane wrappers that we used to have in the olden days. How did packaging, how does it improve the chances of a product being noticed, of a product selling?
Well, we still are human beings that are guided by our senses. Let me preface that by saying I always do this whenever I give a talk, and I ask consumers, and I say, why is it that when you walk into a supermarket, one of the first things you'll notice and the first thing you're going to put, you'll put into your cart is fruits and produce. And after that, you'll put all the heavy stuff on top of it. You'll put sodas on top of it. That's because a supermarket is designed, and that, and you might have a bakery on the right, you might have the takeout on the left. It appeals to our senses, to our smell, to our sight, the color. The fact, the reason the produce is there is because it provides the color like no other items in a supermarket does. Packaging is the same way. It immediately appeals to our senses, the way it looks. If you look today in the refrigerator case, and you see even an item like hummus, the way it's packaged today compared to the way it was 10 years ago, there's no comparison. It gives you a feeling of comfort, gives you a feeling of freshness. It makes you want to buy the product. That's what packaging is supposed to do. Packaging is supposed to be a magnet. And a lot of the old companies that have been around for 110 years, like a company like Manischewitz, reinvented themselves recently just by changing their packaging, changing their image,
Absolutely.
Changing their logo, looking more progressive, looking more modern, trying to appeal to young consumers. It is, as I pointed out before, it is the magnet that makes people buy products, because studies have shown that 60 to 70% of items purchased are bought on impulse, not by lists. So it's what you see, what you smell, hopefully what you taste, and I encourage it certainly at every level of retail. Let the consumer taste products, especially one of the complaints that I get from many consumers, from many bloggers, is that there are so many new products out on the market, and they're simply not aware of it. And they want to know how they can, if someone can flag it for them. And then when they finally try the new product, is the whole idea, what do I do with that new product? How do I create a new recipe? How do I create a new meal idea? We're living in a generation today where what I call patching is back. A young housewife today might have a library of kosher cookbooks, not just a kosher cookbook. She might go online to look for new items. There is a desire to not only plump the meal down on the table, but to do it tastefully and with a good presentation.
The kosher consumer is no longer just and only the Orthodox Jew. The kosher consumer includes Muslims because of their halal diet, and apparently the only way they can be sure that there is no pork products or byproducts is by buying kosher products, and also many Gentiles who would not normally care for kosher food suddenly are buying kosher food. Why? And how much of a percentage is the non-Orthodox Jewish consumer in the total population of consumers of kosher food?
Well, it varies from market to market. I recently was talking to some people in Detroit, and they gave me a number like 30% of their consumers who buy kosher are non-traditional kosher consumers, meaning Christians and Muslims and other religions. I myself, who visit supermarkets quite often, I have witnessed supermarkets that may have a kosher deli right next to a non-kosher deli, and you'll see a large number of non-Jews on the kosher deli side. And that is because I think, and this is what they tell me, the retailers tell me, there is a feeling that the kosher products somewhere have another set of eyes, that their rabbis watching them. There's less issues with salmonella. Even if it is a little more expensive, It gives the non-Jewish consumer a level of comfort. That's one thing. The other thing is that the kosher market is producing a lot of nice and interesting products. For example, I remember being in Las Vegas and watching non-kosher consumers picking up elite candies because they had such colorful packaging to it. So where the kosher market has really succeeded, it's produced products that are not only desirable and quality-oriented towards kosher consumers, but it's good for any consumer. And this has been a major, major change in the way kosher looks at itself. You take today, there are wines today, like the Bartanura wine, for example, that is very much in demand in non-Jewish circles. So that process of kind of crossing over into the market has enabled many companies to invest more in research and development, to expand the new products, and also to get into places where they never were able to get in before, to put up major sections in the Costcos and the Targets of the world and Walmarts, something that 20 years ago when I used to talk to people about that, it was like a dream that it might ever happen.
So you're saying that we have evolved tremendously, far faster than one would have thought possible. Looking at statistics on the kosher markets, on 2003 it was $150 billion, and then in 2008 that $150 billion became $200 billion. Where do you project it might become this year or next?
Well, I want to clarify what those numbers mean, because the number of 150 or 200 billion, or maybe now over 250 billion, simply says that the United States, for example, has about $600 billion of products on shelves. Of that, nearly half of those products have kosher certification. You could take companies like Coca-Cola and Pepsi alone, probably put you over the 30 billion mark. So what that says is that the kosher symbol, and I like to, whenever I give my marketing lectures, I like to say that there is no symbol in the world, including Boeing or whatever, that has such an extensive value like the kosher symbol, because it is on more products than any other product manufactured. So the market itself is estimated at being, I mean people who buy kosher because it is kosher, not because they happened to buy Coca-Cola and it had an OU on it. They bought it because they wanted to buy kosher. That is about $12 billion, which is huge compared to the way it was, let's say, 20 years ago, where it was somewhat in the order of about $2 billion. So this is an incredible story that, every time we think that it is plateaued, we see new development and new growth. And it just continues. And Kosher Fest itself is an example of this development. I mean, I remember when the show first started, some of the icon companies of kosher showed up with booths that were pipe and drape, with a table, very schlocky looking, you might say. They looked the part the way they were 23, 25 years ago. Today, when you go to Kosher Fest, you see these elaborate booths. Incredible presentation, and of course the products themselves, the packaging. So that change is very much evident, and I believe that Kosher Fest had a role in that, because it kind of like became the showcase for the industry, and everyone was striving to be like everybody else. And of course, there's nothing like a good competitive environment, to pressure people to do the right thing. So. And we continue to see. We continue to see that change. We continue to see, for the first time, we see kosher supermarkets that are upscale and gourmet stores like Pomegranate and Rockland Kosher or 7 Mile Market, stores that were kosher stores but today are really centers for upscale kosher foods.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I remember when I used to live in Muncie years ago, before we had Rockland Kosher, there used to be some small markets. And, well, if it was a choice between going there and trying to find a similar item at Price Chop or some of the other supermarkets, I would have preferred going to the non-Jewish one. Why? Because A, the non-Jewish one was usually cleaner, it was had a great selection, and the place was a pleasure to walk in. You see that today in places like Seasons or in places like Pomegranate, which did not exist just a few years ago.
Yes, yeah, because they, you're looking at a new age of kosher consumer. They don't just want to go shopping. They want to have an experience.
Exactly.
You know, today with social media, you know, and blogging and everything else, a woman might walk into or a shopper might walk into a supermarket, see an item, put it on her Facebook page, and within an hour you have 20 other customers coming in and looking for that item. What has happened with all of these cookbooks that have come out has meant that, that the kosher industry or the kosher retail industry has had to have the ingredients to satisfy their demand. You couldn't say I ran out of quinoa. You have to have quinoa. You have to have herbs. You have to have all of these new items that are part of the upscale cooking. So this is how this industry has evolved. And it's taken a little bit of time for the people outside the kosher industry to recognize that, because even as the changes were happening, they still had the perception of kosher being schmaltzy, outdated. But now when they go into the supermarket and they see these items, and you go into a major chain like a Winn-Dixie or like a Wegmans, and you see the way they present kosher food, it just gives an entirely different impression. It's a whole new world.
What on this upcoming Kosher Fest on November,
mm-hmm.
besides the booth, what else are you going to be having there? What other activities will be going on?
Well,
like, for example, you've had the culinary contests and so on. Are there going to be any of those?
Yeah, we always have... a couple of major events. One event that always captures a lot of attention is the new product competition. And we have each year, and growing so each year, between 300 and 500 new products are introduced in every category. And we give out awards in 20 or so different categories for best dairy, best meats, or the newest and creative. Give out best of show, so there's a lot of interest. That's done before the show, except that the awards are given out at the show. So that's one. The culinary competition again. We last year, and we invite some of the upscale New York restaurants, and everyone knows the restaurant scene has dramatically changed over the last few years. To be involved in a competition for some of the best dishes. We have some really important seminars. I mean, I do every year. I do sort of the state of the industry, where I take the industry from where it was a year ago to where it is at the point of the next Kosher Fest, and sort of project ahead. This year, we're going to do a little bit about kosher products that have made it into the mainstream, or have the opportunity for going mainstream, because this is kind of a new trend. Now you have hummus, Sabra hummus, being sold at airports all over America. It's not necessarily projected anymore as a kosher item. And there are many other products that are in that category. I sometimes, you know, ask an audience, I say, look, what is the most successful Jewish or kosher product in the history of foods? And everybody thinks, and I get different answers, and I said, you know what the most successful product is? It's the bagel. Because the bagel was started by Eastern European Jews. We retained its Yiddish name of bagel, which means round. And whether you're in Osaka, Japan, or in Thailand, they still refer to it by the name bagel. So, and there are many, many products today that, if you look at them, They may be kosher because they are kosher, but they certainly have the opportunity to go well beyond kosher into the mainstream.
Well, you see that, for example, in wines. Some of the kosher wines have won international awards. And many of the wine critics refer to them as superb wines that happen to be kosher.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
I'm sure you have that with
late...
many other items.
Oh, yeah, sure. But with wines, you see a lot now where kosher wines are put into a liquor store, and it's not advertised as kosher, and they just pop off the shelves. Obviously, if you put a big label across it, kosher, there still is a kind of outdated perception of what kosher wine is. So obviously, it doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense just to advertise it in as kosher, but just as a good wine that happens to be kosher. And there are just great wines, and I know. I think what Kedem has done in terms of educating an entire community about quality wines and then brought this to the market from all over the world is nothing short of a revolution.
Well, that revolution actually started with a restaurant that opened 30-some years ago that was Levana's. They were the first ones to actually dare serve dry wines when most conventional wisdom would have said, dry wines to Jews, you better be out of your mind.
Yeah, well, Levana...
Yeah, so he started the revolution.
Absolutely. Levana Kirschenbaum is one of those revolutionaries. I mean, she served in her restaurant venison when nobody else, when people were still thinking of kosher just as being steak. And I think part of her frustration was that she was light years ahead of the rest of the kosher community in terms of the cooking and the ingredients. And I think today she's a lot happier because she sees that the market has caught up to some extent to what her vision was so many years ago.
It has certainly vindicated her.
Yes, without question.
Do you have any interesting anecdotes about the past kosher fests or about your travels around America in regard to kosher products? Anything you've got to share with the audience?
Well, there were a lot of interesting stories over the years that I like to share with audiences. I'll just take two brief stories that I think show a lot about kosher. Many years ago, the Dodger organization in Los Angeles, before they came back to play baseball, they had an evening welcoming the Dodgers back. And there was Tommy Lasorda was the manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers at that time, and he was also in business. He had a pasta company, and there was at that reception, he noticed that there was a small table because some of the investors were Orthodox Jews that said kosher on it. So he walked over to the executive manager of his company and he said, "Why is not pasta on this table?" Well, he says, you know, Skip, I'm not sure that our pasta is kosher. Well, if my pasta is not kosher by tomorrow morning, you're fired. And so I got a call from this manager, of Lasorda Company, and he says, you have to help me. I need to make the Lasorda pasta kosher. And so I called the OU, and the first question that the OU asked me was, well, where is this Lasorda pasta produced? So I went back to him, found out where it is produced. It turned out that it was produced in a kosher facility, all kosher, all by the OU. And the manager was able to go to Lasorda the next morning, and he says, Skip, overnight, we are now kosher. And he sent me a beautiful letter thanking me for saving his neck. Yeah, so there are many in the whole private label, there are many companies that are kosher, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they put it on the label. And you have today over 10,000 manufacturing plants in the United States that have kosher certification.
Yes, we have definitely come a long, long way.
Yeah, the other story that I always like to tell is one of the head mashgichim of the OU came to a plant that was just had received certification. When he walked in there, the entire staff of about 200 people, all dressed in white uniforms and clean white uniforms, were standing along the barriers all around to greet the rabbi who was coming. Who was coming for the first time to make the plant kosher. And the foreman says, he says, Rabbi, would you please bless our product? And he says, well, it doesn't work that way. Kosher is not blessing the food. Kosher is a method of preparation. It is by Jewish law, what animals, not mixing milk and meat. No, no, Rabbi, please don't be modest. You see, we have 200 people waiting for the blessing. And he saw he couldn't get out of it in any way. So he walked over to the walls, and he put his hands on the walls, and he said, may God bless this plant. So he was applauded, and it was in the newspaper the next day that the rabbi blessed the plant.
Okay. Yes, people still need some education as to what kosher is. Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
The average consumer is learning that there is something to kosher that is different, that is better, that is more wholesome. Whether it's true or not.
That is very, very, very true.
Okay, and we're out of time. Thank you very, very much. This was a very entertaining, very informative show. Be'ezrat Hashem, we'll have you again.
Well, thank you. I look forward to it.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, good night.
Good night and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Kosher Scene. Thank you very, very much.